All right. Well, it is my pleasure, with a little feedback, to introduce Kimon Onuma, whose name I totally butchered, probably. Okay. I had the good fortune of having dinner with Kimon last night at the Ace Hotel, not knowing that he was today's presenter. So, he got to learn a little bit about the Cascadia staff, including a couple new words, I think. But it's my pleasure to introduce him. He's an architect and software developer, and he's got some really exciting presentations for you here this morning. So let's give it up for Kimon. Thank you.
Yes, you got it.
Well, we're starting here.
Can you hear?
Okay.
Your mic.
Great.
Okay, have fun.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cascadia, for having me here. This is my first presentation with you guys, and I'm really excited. I'd like to kind of get I was here yesterday, so I was kind of getting a sense of who's here and what your interests are. This presentation, there's going to be two parts, actually. I have a second presentation at 10:30, I believe, which will be much more hands-on, interactive. We're going to actually be doing a live charrette, designing parts of Portland, actually. We're going to use part of Portland and showing you some other projects using integrated practice and some of the tools. But I'd like to get kind of a show of hands of architects and audience, engineers, government state agencies, utilities, okay. Who knows about BIM, building information modeling? Uses building information modeling, maybe? Okay, so there's a few. So I'm gonna start from some basic ideas about what we're going to be seeing here today. And just if we have questions, I don't mind you interrupting me, and we can kind of go like that, or let me go for 20 minutes, and we'll kind of keep it interactive as we go along here. Before I start with the PowerPoint, I'd like to just go through this animation that was playing while you were walking in and explain a few things on this. This is a project we actually worked on with the U.S. Coast Guard using web-enabled, what we called web-enabled BIM. And our goal was to what they call break the stovepipes. They have a lot of stovepipes of how they go about designing and maintaining and managing their facilities. And they knew there was a better way of doing it, so we were involved with this project where we consulted with them on a roadmap and a strategy to actually change the entire process. How do you go about looking at your facilities, managing, planning for the future, deciding in real time how to design new facilities, using open standards or linking to GIS, showing the value chain. This swirling, spinning thing here is conceptually showing all the different groups that are involved in a project. And we wanted to make it a simple way to interact and be able to predict the future, basically minimize risk and move fast. It was a real-time process. We use building information modeling and several other tools, including our tool, to connect the logic. We say that there's a lot of knowledge in a process. It was four command centers, very complex project, 35 command centers around the country, had furniture and equipment, and specific requirements for their different scenarios of the Coast Guard used these. We had a web-enabled interface, multi-users, real-time, basically building information modeling on the web, doing really rapid analysis of existing buildings, moving in the requirements, having users log in from around the world, looking at data attached to buildings, moving it out to desktop building information modeling tools when they decided this is the design we want. Either it was a renovation of existing building, creating a new building, or deciding maybe we don't even need this building. The Coast Guard was very forward thinking because they were looking at this as it's all connected. The dots are all over the place. It's not just about the building. The building is connected to the business need, the process, is connected to what they do as an organization. They had a lot of processes that were disconnected and inefficient. This was for 35 command centers. This is the entire Coast Guard inventory that you're seeing on screen here, and it was done in an unprecedented amount of time. They actually took a 10-month process for one command center and shrunk it down to 1 month. They had a lot of other factors in there about ships and boats, what they call cutters, coming in, creating the demand for space. They wanted to, what they called Sim Coast Guard, actually, looking at the way that their missions are connected to the facilities, creating demand, and then looking at how all the dots are connected. It's about people, it's about places, it's about buildings, it's about sustainability. How do we create a much more efficient way of doing things? So that was a probably too fast animation, but I'm going to be going over that slower next. I just want to give you an overview of where we're heading with this. But before we go there, I wanted to give you a little bit of background about this. Okay. So, as was mentioned earlier, I'm an architect. We've been using building information modeling since the early 90s. And have an office in Tokyo, Japan, and Pasadena, California. Was doing a lot of traveling back then, so we were always looking for ways to become more efficient about how we even go about doing our projects. In the mid-90s, we started using BIM, creating our own software. Actually, we turned from building architects to software architects. Now we're both. We actually keep both sides balanced. We learn from what we do for designing buildings and facilities and use that on the software side. Most recently, we got a contract with the Smithsonian for the entire Smithsonian roadmap and strategies of how they're going to go about managing their facilities, too, very similar to the Coast Guard projects. We've worked with commercial clients, done everything from single building, single family homes to large scale master plans, city planning. And I've written a lot about integrated practice. I've been published in the Interoperability Report from McGraw-Hill, the AIA reports. We received several awards. There's a book out in, across the hall called Big BIM, Little BIM, which I wrote the intro to. So I've been very much into all of the technology and process change part of it for a long time. So stepping back again, if we're talking about integrated practice, I use this slide a lot because I say, okay, if you go on the internet today and you ask for a plane ticket from Los Angeles to Washington, you get real-time feedback of here's your cost, basically a contract saying here's what's available. And you can literally see tickets disappear if you don't make the decision fast enough. There's no lag time between the time you ask a question and the time you get a response. Unfortunately, in the building industry, in the facilities industry, that is not the case. We have to wait weeks or months or hours before we get a response from the different team members. And that's partly to do with the technology that existed up until now, partly to do with how business is being run. A lot to do about change because some of the technology exists, but the people are not willing to gravitate toward it. Now, this integrated system here is very, there's no minimal training required to use a system like this. You go log in, you put your destination, and a lot of complex stuff happens in the background, including giving you a slew of hotel names and cost of the hotel room that goes to that destination you're talking about. What they're not asking you to do is maintain the aircraft engine. Somebody else is doing that. This critical concept here, because I'll be referring to this later on again, but imagine this system here, if we had to wait, or they don't ask us how much fuel do you want on the plane, for example, when you make an airline reservation. It just kind of, it happens in the background. Planes stay in the air more or less, you know, there's some accidents, but if you look at the building industry today, there's mid-air collisions basically in the way that we go about designing our buildings. The decisions that we make, especially if we're going to start talking about integration and being able to make decisions that talk about life cycle. What happens when you make a decision today affects the full life cycle of the building. And really the only way to do that is to start linking all this knowledge together. And how do we go about doing that? This is a slide from the National, from the NBIMS, what's called National Building Information Modeling Standards from the National Institute of Building Science. This is also an international group called the Building Smart Alliance. So these next series of slides are from them. This group actually supports open standards and using interoperability to support integrated practice. In a traditional process, again, disconnected, stovepiped, linear, pass the information over the wall to the next person, so architect to engineer to owner. Lag time, every time there's a lag time, there's a potential for error, and that's what we want to change. I'm not going to get into the technical details about this, but this is also another concept. If you look at an entire facility, a project, enterprise of Coast Guard or Smithsonian or any type of client that's looking at their buildings, there's many different experts involved in that system. Again, the concept of the Expedia and the airline the aircraft engine, you're not asked to maintain the aircraft engine. There's somebody else doing that. But the fact that they're all connected together allows you to make decisions that relate to that that airline, so you can make a reservation on the plane. The same case is here. The same is true here. If you're looking at architects, engineers, owners, contractors, the public, each has their own perspective of the information that they need from a building and a facility. And if you start creating a structure based on standards, this integrated process actually starts to take off. It starts to really just explode. And that essentially is what the internet is all about. We all agreed that we're going to use a standard of the internet. We don't have 100 different email systems. We basically can pretty much send emails to anybody in the world. It didn't used to be like that. We used to have different systems like CompuServe and AOL having their own proprietary things. But now with a common standard, it allows us to talk to each other. There's zero lag time. So with the Building Smarter Alliance, their goal is to get towards this reality. It's not going to happen overnight, but what I like to say also is the internet is not complete yet we still use it. So it's going to be an evolutionary process. It's also not going to be invented by any one software company. It has to be collaborative and industry-driven, and that's where we all come in. I think that the potential is there right now for all the whole industry, actually, to support this process. So in the traditional sub-optimized process, different software tools are used to pass information between different disciplines. These are not all the this is not a complete list here, but every time you cross over that link, there's a potential for errors happening and information being lost. So one thing I like to say is, as far as sustainability, obviously there's the goal of getting the facility done in the life cycle, but even the process itself, the way it's done today, is broken because we're wasting a lot of energy and resources, even getting to decisions about what we want to do with our facilities. So there's different experts, and basically there's what they call exchanges. If you are a passenger that's looking for an airline ticket, you want the exchange of the cost of the airline ticket. If you're maintaining the aircraft engine, you're interacting in a different way with the aircraft. The same way in the building industry, if you're an architect asking structural information from an engineer, there are specific parts of the building that you need. You don't need the furniture layout, for example. So with the technology, it's actually going to allow us to filter down to this level of granularity. So as far as sustainability goes, we look at it three ways. We think there's design and analysis of the decisions that you're being made, that you're making. The process, like I talked about, if we can make the process more efficient, we're going to make better decisions, and it's going to take less time and less resources to go about doing our business of designing and constructing and engineering buildings. And then there's obviously our relationship with the earth. So decisions that we make, as an architect, I've been very frustrated over the years that when I go and talk to the AIA and my fellow architects, we're very much somehow focused on the building. The building is important, but when we're talking about sustainability, we have to figure out how that building links to the earth. And I'll be showing some examples of that later, too. So we can't talk about sustainability unless we link the two together. And building information modeling can help us do that, as well as GIS. How many of you are aware of GIS systems? Okay. GIS is, you're familiar with Google Earth. Google Earth is a form of GIS. It's geographic information systems about looking at the Earth and location to give you information about what that place is about, but also you can feed information back into it. So when you're designing a building and you want to say, here's my impact on this place on the earth, it's relative to the rest of the surroundings too. It's not just about the building and your property line. So the key to success is to seamlessly move knowledge and information between different systems with no proprietary standards, because if any group, software developer, whoever, starts trapping that information in their own format, it becomes very difficult to start talking about this future that we're all wishing to have, to create a more sustainable process. So our future depends on non-proprietary, open standards way of sharing knowledge and information. And then we would become a sustainable architect. Now this chart here, it might have been shown the other day, but this is a chart showing the productivity rates of non-farm industries, and the building industry is the red line. Everything else, manufacturing, travel, real estate, has been going up exponentially as far as efficiency of how they go about doing business. Unfortunately, the building industry has pretty much stayed flat. We haven't really changed what we're doing, even with today's technologies. A lot of the business processes out there are not efficient, and there's been proven, actually, from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, that there's up to 30% waste in the process itself. So change orders, design, redesigning things, mistakes in construction, mistakes that actually affect the life cycle of the building. So errors that you make today in your design are going to stick around for 50 or 75 years or however long the life cycle of that building is. So the Building Smart Alliance, I'll skip over a few of these. This is how much they've actually documented the dollar amount that this was in 2004 too, and it's actually a much larger number, the cost of lack of interoperability and integrated processes. So the industry could have a possible 30% factor, but they're saying it's a much larger number. We've seen the slide the other day. We're saying that the current construction market is very inefficient about doing things. So it actually creates a huge opportunity. Like we said, if we can start changing it a little bit at a time, or even take big steps, there's a lot of opportunity to become more efficient about how we do that. So we consume a lot of raw materials, like we saw. Amount of electricity is huge that the U.S. The building industry uses. Facilities contribute to a lot of the emissions in the landfills, and U.S. is no longer the world's largest consumer, but we did not slow down. Another sign of the times is the amount of raw materials being consumed in the U.S. This needs to change too. So we're all on the same page about this, but this is basically why all these things are starting to happen from the building industry side too. So changing the business process. If you look at building information modeling and integrated practice, there's a lot of different groups involved in trying to figure out how to link these things together. So all the way from product selection to how that product fits inside a building and how those standards are defined. Because if each group has a different set of standards, we're not going to be able to start talking to each other. And that's, again, an opportunity to look at how to use these new technologies. Some case studies, General Motors actually used building information modeling and radically improved the way that they go about designing and building their factories. They're not doing a great job with their cars right now, but but they actually have shown radical changes. And it was interesting because they are into manufacturing, so they knew that there's ways of cutting production and waste in manufacturing process, so they said there must be a way to do that in construction. They took what used to be a 55-month process for construction, shrunk it down to 48, took the total time, shrunk it down to this level down here. And the way they did that is they basically said, okay, the ground truth is no longer documents. We're not going to use documents and paper and CAD files. We're going to use building information modeling to say this is what we require for our buildings and to be able to fast track it. So having that as close to real-time decision-making, like I showed about Expedia, and getting groups to talk to each other earlier on in the process. That's also another key concept of integrated practice. You don't want to wait to make decisions and then pass it on to the next person. You want to bring the team as far forward as possible as you start working on your designs, even before you decide to do the building, in fact. There's discussions in the Coast Guard, especially the work that we did. Do we need a building? Do we really need that facility? Because in the past, they would say, well, we're running out of space, we need to build more buildings. But that's not always the case. And the same thing with GM. They said if we change this, and they were able to prove that the approach really shifted how their design was being done. So they had working design model, and the owner interacted with that model and the architect and the entire team, and that became the reality. So all clashes and potential problems in the building were detected before the building was built. I heard a presentation in Boston several weeks ago. Somebody said, actually, every great building is built twice. So you build it virtually, you simulate all the problems, and then you start building the real thing. And with GM, it was interesting that whenever they had a clash on the site as they were doing construction, everybody ran back to the computer model. There was a computer set up in the construction site, and all the consultants, and I mean the contractors and subcontractors, would go back to that computer model if a duct was running into a structural system. So they would look at that and they would resolve it right there without any RFIs. They basically knew that that was basically the contract. The contract is the model. This is what we're designing toward. So all types of analysis can be done with these models. They were doing clash detection, mechanical systems, prefabricating a lot of the steel and the ducting, and that was part of the reason why the time was cut to so much. Daniel Liebskin's Denver Art Museum, another case study. Let's start with this. This is what was submitted to the building department for approval, right? A construction document set. And they actually approved that. This is from that 2D document. But the reality of that connection was something like this. So how do you analyze what's there on the left and understand that that's really what you're building? The contractor actually took the architectural set and built this 3D model to resolve connections like that. So the visualization and the data part of this allowed them to make rapid decisions and simulate the problems before they got to the construction site. All the same type of thing. They also did mechanical and electrical systems in that. And this is the completed result. A lot of the, I won't go into the details of all these case studies, but there's case study after case study. This is also another interesting one, the Lucas building in the Presidio in San Francisco, Letterman Digital Arts Center. They found a lot of conflicts before the construction happened for pouring concrete and a lot of other problems with construction. Saved a lot of time and money on that. Massachusetts General Hospital, same type of thing. So these models can be incredibly complex. There's a lot of different pieces in it. And with integrated practice and the process, a lot of people ask when they first look at this, who owns that model? Who is going to take all of this information and manage the accuracy of the model? With building information modeling, you can have it all in one model. But imagine the Expedia example that I gave you earlier. You have many different airlines with their own databases, their own cost information, their own seat assignments, working together in a common format, and you as a consumer are logging in and getting information to multiple airlines. So in the future, the direction this is all going towards is that each user, each person in this equation, the structural engineer, for example, would own the structural part of the model as the design is being done. The architect would own the architectural part of the model. When the building is complete, the actual model itself could go back to the owner. Maybe the owner uses it for facility management so they don't have to recreate information. And in a sense, the public owns the information too in the end. If you have, imagine a city full of buildings and you knew where hazardous material was in a building, a firefighter going into a building has a right to know where that material is or what the structural system is in the building. So the ownership of information, this starts crossing over into legal issues with all this too, because obviously our current contracting and legal system makes it difficult to even talk about those kind of things. But if you look towards the future and say, okay, information like this has to be used in many different ways. It's not only for building the building. It's not only for ordering materials. It's for using it for the life cycle and managing the building for the owner. It's for the public in case something happens to the building and being able to protect the public in a fire or whatever other kind of disaster happens. So having information about the building is incredibly valuable. And in our work with the Coast Guard and the Smithsonian and others, they actually even say that the information about the building is more valuable than the physical building itself over the life cycle. If you have bad information, you can't make decisions about the building. So that's actually a potential, and that's where we actually saw it from years ago, why we wanted to get into this business. Because if you, in this information age, if you can manage that knowledge and information, there's an incredible amount of value to that. So we are, as architects and engineers and planners and designers, builders, we are in the information business. We gather information to obviously put a physical structure together, but by being able to master that use of knowledge and information, there's an incredible value to it. So visualization, there's all kinds of great visualization examples. We saw some great ones yesterday for lighting studies. So there's a lot of different uses for these models, not only limited to putting together a set of plans. Some pre-assembly of parts, prefabrication, there's a lot of this starting to happen too. If you can manufacture it in the factory and ship it, you can actually reduce energy to put the building together, actually, because you're having a more controlled environment and more quality. This used to be harder to do because it was thought of that this was only for mass production, but now with the technology, you can have mass customization even of building parts. So you can manufacture a lot of the stuff in the factory and take it together on the site, and things actually fit together if you have the physical model built. The digital model built beforehand. Even for existing buildings, this is for the Sydney Opera House, they actually did not have a computer model of this. Obviously, it was built a long time ago, but they've gone through an extensive restoration renovation project, and they actually went through and built the computer model of it to be able to plan for how the renovation was going to take place. Code checking. I don't know how many of you are aware, but the government of Singapore actually accepts building information models. You actually submit them a digital file, and it is an initial code check. So you could reduce the amount of time it takes to manually code check, and you get more consistency, too. The International Code Council and in the U.S., too, the smart codes are starting to do some testing of how that would work in the U.S. Essentially, you log into a website, you take your model, you don't take the documents and send them to someone for checking. You actually take the model and submit it, and it runs through an initial check for exiting, for they actually are doing some energy analysis on it, too. It's some initial testing this year. They're going to start releasing more next year. But this will actually relieve a lot of it would create a lot of efficiency in the building industry, too. If you could start submitting your projects as you're designing it, not waiting to complete a whole chunk of work and then submit it and find out there's a problem and have to backtrack. So by having a building information model and being able to submit it, it'll actually allow us as designers and architects and engineers to spend more time on the things you cannot automate. Because for all of the stuff I'm showing you, I'm not suggesting it's all going to become automatic, kind of computer-driven. There's a lot of stuff that we still need to be able to interact with. But having good information and good tools in front of us allows us to do that more intelligently. Fabrication, we're involved with several building product manufacturers too. This is not our project, but it's very similar to this, of how you would take product requirements and actually send it all the way to the factory floor. So as you're designing a building, you can actually send that data to machines on the factory floor and start cutting them and figure out how things are stacked and put on a truck, actually, gone that far. So the Building Smart Alliance, I would encourage everybody to get involved, to at least take a look at their site. It's an international group. There's a lot of thought being going into how do we actually tie these things together. They have a vision and a mission that's on their website, too, and they're looking for new members from different parts of the industry. So owners, designers, contractors, fabricators, and the list goes on. So there's their website. We'll be posting these presentations so you can go to that, or we have it linked from our website too. Okay, next I'm gonna flip to another slide presentation here, but maybe before I go, because I'm gonna change the theme a little bit, are there any questions with what I showed so far?
How do you apply this? Have you seen it applied to other sort of infrastructure projects, bridges, highways, or?
How does it apply to the infrastructure projects? Is your question?
I think it applies, generally speaking.
Yes, in fact, it does. In fact, that's the opportunity I see.